Hi everyone, welcome to the Crypto Rabbit Hole. Today we have Jim Bianco. He's currently the president of Bianco Research, and we're excited to have him. So, Jim, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me, Alex.
Yeah, no problem. So can you start by just telling us a bit about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, so I am the president and founder of Bianco Research. I founded the company in 1998. I am affiliated with a brokerage firm called Arbor Research and Trading, which is a fixed income brokerage firm. I am a, what we would call, since we're talking on the crypto rabbit hole, a TradFi guy. I do macro research in the traditional financial space, and that is the bulk of my business. But along the way in looking at macro, 2017, I fell down the crypto rabbit hole too. And when I started buying Bitcoin back then, and over the years, I have evolved that from just hodling Bitcoin in my, it's called GDAX at the time, before it was acquired by Coinbase, to getting into DeFi and getting into lending and staking and liquidity pools and the whole nine yards associated with that. And now a very big part of what we do in talking about the macro landscape is to talk about what's going on in the crypto space, especially in decentralized finance. So I try to do more than just, you know, be a degen on the coins and decide, you know, when they're going to go up or when they're going to go down. Although I can be as inaccurate about that as anybody else if you need me to be. But I try to also talk a little bit about what's happening in the space and why it seems to be very relevant.
Can you just run us like 30,000 feet, like your high level views on the economy, given the state of the world right now?
Yeah, so I think that, you know, what we have to recognize is the big economic event that has happened over the last year is inflation. We have at least by the headline number, 7.5% inflation. That is the highest in 40 years. And given what's happened with geopolitics over the last couple of weeks, and I'm speaking, you know, obviously about Russia invading the Ukraine, this is going to cause prices of raw materials and food and energy that we get from that area to go up. So this is going to put upward pressure on inflation as well too. Now, there's a debate in the financial markets. If there's inflation, what should the Federal Reserve do about it? And a lot of people have been arguing, especially the day we're talking, the 28th, given what's happened over the weekend and stuff, that the Fed should hike rates less because their view is this could slow the economy, prevent people from wanting to spend, slow down economic activity, and the Fed wouldn't want to burden the economy with higher interest rates on top of that. Now, I've argued something different. I've argued that the priority of the Federal Reserve has changed. And the priority of the Federal Reserve is now inflation. And the Fed has only one tool to deal with inflation. They can raise interest rates, make the cost of money more expensive, and slow economic activity. So when people say, well, the Fed can't raise rates because that might slow the economy, I'm going to turn around and say, no, that's exactly what they need to do, is slow the economy. Now, why do they need to slow the economy? This is where it gets a little controversial. I've argued that this 7.5% inflation rate is more injurious to the economy, will hurt the economy more than if the stock market sold off 20 or 30%. And the reason is because the Federal Reserve does a study of consumer finances. 40% of the American public, 40, have less than $1,000 of savings and they rent. They don't have an investment portfolio. They don't own a home. So when the stock market booms and home prices go straight up, they don't participate in it. But when that is a byproduct of that is 7.5% inflation, they see that their dollar buys them less every month. Right. That's made them extraordinarily unhappy. And that's why the president's approval rating is diving and Congress's approval rating is diving. And there's a general unease. And the Federal Reserve has to address that. They have to bring down prices. They have to bring in inflation. And if that means they have to slow the economy, and if that means that the stock market's going to struggle, then so be it. That's because the alternative, oh, we can't have the stock market go down 20%. Do you know how much pain that would cause? And the answer is less pain than right. if you let inflation keep running. And so that's why I think that they're going to have to raise rates, and they're going to have to raise rates a lot. Can I throw out one other thing too, that is relevant to a crypto discussion? February 2022 is going to go down, I think, as a pivotal moment for crypto, because at the beginning of the month, we had the trucker protest in Canada, and Canada put on an Emergencies Act, and via the Emergencies Act started freezing the accounts of people that either donated to the truckers or were part of the protest. They took your money away from you without a court order, without due process. We ended the month with the world coming together and banning Russia from the SWIFT system and their central bank from dealing with other central banks. We took their money away from them. Now, you could argue in either or both cases that we were justified in doing it. And maybe we were in either or both cases. But the fact of the matter is, it became very clear, and I like to say this in stark terms, Alex, you, me, your dad, everybody watching this podcast, all of us have a net worth of zero. All of the money that we have is actually owned by the financial institution we keep it in. They have a promise, a ledger that says of our financial institution's money, we agree that Jim Bianco could have some of that mm-hmm. because of the ledger we have. But now we're finding out, except when they change their mind, and then they could decide that it's no longer my money anymore. So that is thrusting onto the market this whole idea about decentralization, permissionless, censorship-proof money. You know, at the beginning of the month, a lot of people's eyes glazed over when you started using those terms. At the end of the month, they're starting to understand what those terms mean. If the government can do this to individual truckers and or to a government, one thing we know about government power is that over time, it is abused. It may be justified in the beginning, but that doesn't mean it will be justified in the future. And it will be abused, and people are going to start seeking ways to protect themselves from it. And that's where cryptocurrencies come in.
Yeah, so Bitcoin until today really hasn't been, you know, reflecting the growth a lot of people projected it to in situations like these. But today it kind of went on a run. So would you say that's the only reason, or at least the primary reason for that progress?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I have been arguing on my Twitter feed and some other places. Even this past weekend, I put up a chart that showed the correlation of Bitcoin to the S&P 500. And it's 80% correlated to it. Mm-hmm. You know, and I've argued the reason that they're so correlated is this is the problem with institutional adoption of cryptocurrencies, is that these large financial institutions come in, and unfortunately, they're not very sophisticated. They just basically open a Coinbase account and they buy Bitcoin or they buy Ethereum. And that's it. They're done. They're not literally lending or staking or borrowing or putting it in a liquidity pool or any of that stuff, at least not yet. So they treat Bitcoin and Ethereum like it's a technology. So it becomes like another version of the stock market. And so that's why they've been all correlated. Well, today, we massively broke that correlation. We had Bitcoin and Ethereum soar. Bitcoin was up over 10% today.
Right.
And we had the stock market, the S&P 500, down slightly. Now, maybe that will follow through in the coming days. And maybe we'll finally start to realize that Bitcoin and Ethereum and cryptocurrencies in general, they're just not the end of the risk curve. The risk curve meaning what's the safest investment you could buy? A government bond. Then what's the next safest? A corporate bond. What's the next riskiest would be a stock. What's even riskier? A NASDAQ stock. What's the riskiest thing you could buy? A cryptocurrency. So we view them all on that continuum. And maybe we're going to start to realize, no, cryptocurrencies don't belong on that continuum. They are a different thing unto themselves. And maybe that's what we're beginning to see today, is that they are a different thing unto themselves. And that this whole idea of having a way to hold my the value that I have earned in a way that cannot be censored, cannot be taken away from me, especially without due process, is that why I think you might see cryptocurrencies, you know, to use a trading term, catch a bid, and people start, you know, saying, maybe I should put some money into this, and put it into a wallet or into a ledger where no one can get at it except me.
So that actually leads me to my next question. Do you see Bitcoin as more of a safe haven asset or still more of a risk asset?
Well, you know, it's interesting that we're talking today, because 24 hours ago, I would have told you it is a risk asset. Mm-hmm. And the reason I think it has been a risk asset is because of that, like I said, big institutions, big mutual funds and pension plans and hedge funds, they come in, they buy cryptocurrencies, and they go, well, how do we value these things? And they think of them just like the ARK fund. They think of them as risky technology stocks, is the way that they do it. And I said, and I was arguing, and I've been arguing, this is not correct, but this is the way it is. And so it was a risk asset, but maybe because of throwing Russia off the SWIFT system, censoring their central bank, that they can't do business with their central bank, literally a week after they took all the money away from truckers and the donators to truckers in Canada, all of a sudden people are starting to look at it differently. And it might be a store of value, and it might be a hedge against uncertainty. And people are starting to understand that. Like, you know, it's been argued, this trucker strike and throwing Russia off of SWIFT is worth more than 50 Super Bowl ads in trying to get people to understand the importance of cryptocurrencies.
Mm-hmm. So I've been having some conversations, and I've seen this circulating a bit. People are, you know, with the Russians being kind of banned from the SWIFT system and international banking systems, a lot of these Russian, you know, oligarchs and people in power, people are saying they might transition to Bitcoin because it's really the only thing that'll, you know, provide them value that they can have. So do you see that as potentially being an argument against Bitcoin, or at least prompting regulations?
Well, yeah. I mean, first of all, to the first part of your question, yes. I mean, it is a place that they can place their money, and it can be outside of the reach of governments and regulators as well. And if constructed properly, if it works, yeah, that you will probably see regulators and you will see governments move in to try and restrict cryptocurrencies. But again, if it's constructed properly, they won't be able to do it, nor should they be able to do it. Look, you know, it's a very simple process. And I said it before, can money be private property? We all think, yes, my money's mine. But in reality, as I said, we all have a net worth of zero. Mm-hmm. We all have a net worth of zero, and we have to stay in the good graces of our bank, because if we upset our bank will take our money away from us. You know, and so that is what we have to be careful, or our bank will unbank us. In 2022, if you don't have a bank account, it's very hard to live in modern society. And I'll give you a quick example. Hayden Adams is the creator of the Uniswap protocol. It's a decentralized exchange on the Ethereum network, and it is the largest DEX in the world. I think it gets about 80% of all decentralized trading volume. It's almost as big as Coinbase by itself. Hayden is 27 years old, and a few months ago, he was on the front page of the Wall Street Journal. Bankers, meet your worst enemy. He's coming after you. He's a geeky kid who's 27 years old. He looks like he's 14, and he's on the cover of the Wall Street Journal. JP Morgan Chase being the retail arm of JP Morgan,
right,
sent him a letter out of the blue, canceled his account, told him they had 30 days to get his money out of the bank. They were no longer going to do business with him. They can, you know, they can, they gave him no explanation other than that he tweeted out that other people in the crypto space this was happening to. So the banks can just turn around and summarily punish you. We don't like what you're doing. You're threatening our business. So we're going to take your bank account away from you. Wow. And like I said, try and live in 2022 without a bank account. It's not easy. Oh, yes, he can go to another bank and he can get it. He can get it. But the point is, now he's at the good graces of that bank until they get upset with him or for whatever reason or no reason. And this is part of the problem with the current banking system. Cancel culture has come to banking. And it's one thing to get your Twitter account locked. It's a whole nother thing when they take your money away from you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that sounds dystopian, you know?
It is very dystopian. It is.
In this generation, you know, or at least in recent times, we haven't seen full-scale war. And we haven't really seen slow markets. So in this time of change, like, how would you instruct people to potentially change their strategies in going about the markets?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting because let me say something that's a little bit contradictory to what I just said before. While what the Russians are doing in the Ukraine, let's call that a kinetic war, an actual shooting war. Yeah. With actual soldiers on the ground, the response to that used to be, for a millennium, you had two options. You could either respond by sending the young men of your nation to meet their young men and kill each other on the battlefield, or do nothing. Those were your two options.
Right.
Well, in 2022, we have a third option. We can engage in a digital war, and we can engage in a war where we could freeze their bank accounts, shut them out of the financial system because of the global interconnectedness of the world economy like we've never had before. We could have cyber warfare against them. We could shut down their internet, or they could try and do the same to us. And that's what that seems to be the route that we seem to be going down right now. Now, on one hand, I am okay with this because, like I said, if the options are do nothing, and if you come to the conclusion, well, we shouldn't do nothing about this, let's just argue that if you come to that conclusion, then your other two options are send young men to die or engage in financial warfare. And I would rather we engaged in financial warfare than send young men to die. And so in that respect, I'm really okay with what we're doing, but it comes with that downside that they don't have to stop with Russia. They can turn to me or you in the future if they decide they don't like us. Mm-hmm. And so there's going to be this balance, right? Do we have control over the financial system so we can engage in a digital war? Or do we protect ourselves from somebody engaging in a digital war against us? These are big, heady questions. And I don't know if I have the answers to them. And I don't know if anybody else has the answers to them. And as little as 10 days ago, this wasn't an issue, but it is definitely an issue now. And so cryptocurrencies are right at the center of this right now, because what do I do to protect myself from a government or financial institutions that could say, I don't like you, take your money away from you. I don't like you, close your bank account. And the answer is cryptocurrencies is the way to do it. And will governments try to stop it? You bet they'll try and stop it. But if done correctly, they won't be able to.
Can you elaborate on what that means by done correctly?
If it's truly decentralized and it's truly permissionless, and that there is no backdoor, there is no way to hack it. Now, we know that Bitcoin itself seems to be a fairly solid technology. The blockchain of Bitcoin and the cryptography of Bitcoin cannot be, it's immutable, it cannot be hacked. You know, people can't steal from the blockchain directly. But then the next layer, I have this Bitcoin, where do I keep it? Well, I can't keep it at a centralized exchange. like a Coinbase or a Binance or a Kraken, because literally today, the government sent them a letter today asking them to freeze the accounts of everybody that has cryptocurrencies in Belarus and in Russia. And they sent back a letter just a little while ago and said, no, they're not going to do it. But they do have the capability to do
it. They can, yeah.
So they can. They can. So you're always at risk. Well, the other option is I could put it into a cold storage wallet, or I could put it on, I could put it into a hot wallet offline, and I have my own private keys. Well, as long as you are doing it in a legitimate wallet that can't be hacked, that can't be compromised in any way, and you recognize that you have your private keys and that you can't lose your private key, because that's one other thing that makes people very unsettled about cryptocurrencies, right? Well, you have to have your private keys, which is your password. What happens if you lose it? There ain't no 1-800 number to call to get your password back. You lose it, it's gone, goodbye. You know, so be very careful with that. And if somebody gets your password, they'll just take the money out of your account and it's gone, goodbye. There's no 1-800 number to call and say help as well. But these used to be impediments that made people worried about using cold storage. But now what we've seen, maybe they're not such impediments anymore. This is going to be the debate that we're going to have. And this is going to be the discussion we're going to have as we move forward from here.
Might have. Do you see any other inherent risks in Bitcoin that people are really ignoring right now?
Well, the other risk with Bitcoin, of course, is you want to keep your money in Bitcoin because it's outside of the reach of the government or regulators. Okay. But eventually, you're going to have to live in the real world, right? It's fine and dandy if I have all of this Bitcoin, but I still got to pay my rent. I still got to buy groceries. I still got to fill up my car. And there isn't enough, there technically isn't zero options, but there isn't enough realistic options that I can actually pay for that stuff with cryptocurrency. So eventually I'm going to have to convert that back into US dollars or euros or yen or British pounds, and then use those to pay my rent, fill up my car, buy groceries, and the like. And regulators can catch you at that spot. This has been one of the big issues when it comes to hacks in cryptocurrencies. You know, we always hear about, oh, so-and-so hacked this or so-and-so hacked that, and they stole all these coins. Well, a lot of people don't tell you is, in a lot of these cases, you know, these coins are sitting out in a wallet, and you could go to BTC scan or Etherscan and you could actually see the coins in a wallet. Great. They own them. They got the private key. They're theirs. What can they do with them? The minute that they try and move that money into US dollars, the FBI is all over them. And I'll give you a great example. Last year, the Colonial Pipeline was hacked. The Colonial Pipeline was hacked, where the hackers basically shut down the computer system, and then they sold them a password to unlock the computer system for something like 80 Bitcoin. So it was at $4.2 million or something like that at the time. And then the hackers, the money was sitting in a BTC wallet. You go to BTC scan and you can see it. And then the hackers moved it to a Coinbase, or they moved it to a regulated exchange. Everybody thinks it was Coinbase and Coinbase denies it, but they moved it to a regulated exchange with the intention of then converting it to dollars. Bam, the FBI took the money away from them and found out who they were and arrested them. So great, you know, you've got all these Bitcoins in this wallet and no one can touch them and they're freely traded and they have value. But if you're trying to reach from beyond the law, it's hard to try and convert it to US dollars and something you could use. There are ways you can do it, privacy coins and stuff, but these get to be very, very complicated and very, very difficult things to do as well. So yes, you could hold your wealth in a cold storage wallet, but then your hope is this will become more mainstream. And then when you need to convert it to use it, it won't be such a big deal in the future.
Do you ever see it becoming mainstream to the point where you could pay for gas with Bitcoin, or, you know, buy coffee with it in the morning?
To be technical about it, not with Bitcoin itself, because right. I don't think the blockchain has the transactions per second capability, or even the Lightning Network has the transactions capability to handle, you know, 100,000 transactions a second, because if you add up everybody around the world buying mm-hmm. coffee or paying for gas or groceries, there's like 100,000 transactions a second. Maybe on the Ethereum blockchain, once they've got through the merge and they go to proof of stake and they do sharding and you move up to L2s, layer twos, they have some capabilities there to do that as well too. But yes, and then also you could introduce the idea of what is a stable coin. So you're not paying with an asset that can move 10% in 4 hours, which is what Bitcoin did today. And so, you know, if you bought a car with Bitcoin this morning, you 10% overpaid for it by the afternoon because it went up so much. You should have bought it in the afternoon. It would have cost you 10% less money as well. So, yeah, I think that there is that possibility that that can happen. But there still needs to be more build out, more acceptance, and it's coming, and it's coming rather quickly.
I hope you're right.
Yeah, I do too.
So I don't think we have too much time left, but you know, Bitcoin hasn't quite lived up to, and I know it's early, but Bitcoin hasn't quite lived up to its, you know, reputation as digital gold so far. What can it do to reach that status in the future?
I think when people start to realize that it is not the end of that risk curve, which I think is happening, and when people start to realize that there is a decentralized finance community, that there's things you can do with it other than just buy and hodl it. You can stake it. You can lend it. You can put it in a liquidity pool. You can buy insurance against it. You know, and when you start to realize that there's all this stuff, you then start to realize that there are other strategies that can be done as well too. You can buy stable coins and you can lend them out if you think the price is going to fall. If you want to hodl your coins, you can put them into a liquidity pool and earn interest on them while you're hodling them. And once we start to understand that, and there are these options that we could do, then it can serve as a better store of value. But right now, if people still want to view it as a binary, you either own it or you don't, and those are your only two options, and there's nothing else to do, then it doesn't achieve its full potential. It becomes, like I said, it looks like another unprofitable technology company that ARK Innovations would buy, and it's treated that way. And that's what's been the case. Now, like I said, maybe literally the day we're talking, we're starting to see an awakening as to that it has more uses than just buy and hodl it and hope for number to go up. And I hope so. And if so, it will then achieve that store of value, digital gold hedge that everybody thinks it might be or can be.
Okay, yeah, no. Once again, I really hope, I do hope that prediction comes true. So, Jim, thank you so much. I think we'll leave it at there.
Okay.
Thank you so much for coming on the Crypto Rabbit Hole. Sorry we didn't have more time. I really enjoyed this discussion. And I guess one more question is, if anyone watching wants to, you know, learn more about you or, you know, just hear more of your thoughts, where can they find you?
Well, I'm very active on Twitter at Bianco Research. My website is biancoresearch.com. If you're into LinkedIn, you can look me up at Jim Bianco as well too.
That's awesome. So I encourage anyone watching to definitely look into that. And as always, you can check us out here at the Crypto Rabbit Hole at cryptorabbithole.net and on Twitter at AP_rabbithole. And thank you so much for watching. Thank you.